Hey everyone, welcome to the Naughty Shaman Podcast. I'm your host, Natalie Carlisle, and I can't wait to dive in to a world where the sacred meets the wild and keeps things totally real. In each episode, we are going to dive into what it truly means to live a radiant life that is unapologetically real. And if you're ready to get started, so am I. Hello, 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 Luminous Warriors. This is Natalie coming at you live from Naughty Shaman Studios, which tonight is my living room. And I have missed you. I have been on vacation and I have been traveling and I have been learning and I have been filling my brain with amazing, amazing new ideas. And I can't wait to tell you all about it, but not tonight. Because tonight we are going to be talking about something different. Tonight I've been having this podcast in particular kind of burning in the back of my brain for a couple of weeks, and I'm so excited to talk with you about it. Tonight is going to be a little bit about prophecy, the prophecy of the Pachacuti, as told to me by my teacher, Alberto Violdo, and a little bit about brain science for you dorky dorks out there who are like me. And we're going to talk about tools for how to deal with life and yourself when the rug gets pulled out from underneath you. I don't know if that's ever happened to you before, but my friends, that has happened to me a bunch. I'm thinking things are going well, and the gentleman in my life, boom, vanish. Thinking things are going well, business idea, boom. No good. Going along. So I've had so many clients that have been having this same thing. People are getting laid off. People have lost investments. People have been watching real estate markets fall and the financial industry fall. And it's interesting because my teacher, Alberto Violdo, and many, many others, talked about this prophecy that came out of Peru. There are similar prophecies in indigenous cultures all around the world. There are similar things happening in North America at this time. It was in the 60s that this prophecy was told by the High Mountain Shaman in Peru. And at the same time, there were a lot of other stories and legends happening in North America, in Europe, and in many other cultures. But I wanted to tell you just a little bit about what they call the Pachacuti and what that means. Very simply, and this is the Naughty Shaman version of this, is that Pacha is earth and Kuti means turn upside down. And back in the day, and up high in the mountains, the wise ones would sit in circle and do prophecy circles. And many, many, many decades ago, there was a time that they foretold of, that they referred to as the Pachacuti, the time when the world would turn over, when the metaphorical poles would shift and the eagle would unite with the condor and the rainbow tribe would come together. And there were many pieces to this prophecy. I heard part of this prophecy told by a Lakota woman on a Shoshone Indian reservation a long time ago in the 90s. And it was about the rainbow tribe at that time. So the Pachacuti fundamentally was about a time when the world would be turning over in such a way that anything built on a false foundation, a foundation not rooted in truth, not rooted in soul truth, would fall away. Any foundation built upon sand would crumble. There's a similar story in the Bible about this, about a foundation made of sand, of clay, and the feet made of clay, and the statue of David. So this idea is not new, but the foretelling of the time of the Pachacuti was to be happening around the time of 2012, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17. It would be, you know, in various traditions, there's a number of years that the Pachacuti occurs in. It doesn't happen like overnight and then the world flips upside down. But it's a slow turning and righting of itself to be in alignment with what is true, to be in integrity with the soul's truth so that organizations, governments, individuals, relationships, financial systems, that everything could come back into balance. And we are in those times right now, according to this legend. And if you look around and read the news, you can see that the world is quite tumultuous. And so there are people that I talk with that are clinging to jobs that they hate, that are not in alignment with their soul, but they've gotten themselves in so much debt or different situations that they feel trapped and encaged in this place that does not resonate with their truth. And in some cases, those people are getting fired, asked to leave, laid off, the business closes, they're called away because of illness in a family, their spouses move to a new city and they leave their jobs. So things that are not in alignment with our personal truths are also falling away. This is happening in relationships as well. And I've had client upon client over the last couple of weeks who are experiencing this feeling of having the rug taken out from under them. And so I wanted to talk a little bit about, as we go through this time period and of having a realignment, an opportunity to realign based on our soul's truth, it will feel like if we're clinging to things that do not serve us at a deep level, if we're clinging to those things, it's possible that they will fall away or that we will choose to have them fall away. Because everyone right now, most people who are at least awake, are craving alignment, they're craving meaning, they're craving connection and truth, and they're craving a different direction than our dominant culture is going. And this is part of the naughty of naughty shaman. Dominant culture is saying, go this way, work all the time, be on your phone all the time, be available all the time, forget what's it's like to look into someone's eyes and to be silent and to care and to love. Get all this fear ingested into your system is what the dominant culture wants us to say. So people who are awake are saying, no thanks, I would rather choose alignment. And in that experience, you might feel like the rug gets pulled out from underneath you from time to time, or that you pull out the rug from underneath you yourself occasionally to get in better alignment. So to talk about the tools, because with shamans, what the main tool is that they have to create magic, to create alignment, to create meaning, is the shifting of perspective. We have control over our perspective. We can control our breath, and we can control our perspective, what we do with our mind. That's about it. We can't control other people. We can't control government systems to a large degree. We can't control weather. We can't control a lot of things, but we can control how we view the world. In some shamanic traditions, how we view the world is generative, which I love, meaning how we view the world is the world that is created before us. The best example of that is Forrest Gump. That movie is brilliant because Forrest Gump looked into the world and saw beauty. He saw people he could trust. He saw opportunity. And guess what he found? Beauty, people he could trust, and opportunity. So in this way, the shamans believe that how we perceive life not only creates our reality internally, but may even be generative in physical reality, which is such an exciting possibility for me. So you can see where being able to shift gears of how we are perceiving the world would be one of the most valuable tools that we have for health, happiness, and success, especially during these times of the turning over when the feminine is rising, the masculine is getting rebalanced, and everything's kind of coming together differently. Having all of this change, we are going to want to have tools to control and modulate how we see the world. So I want to talk about three perceptual states today. And to start off this little chat about the perception states, I want to tell a story. This story, I don't even remember who owns this story. It's not a story that I made up. It's one that I inherited from one of my teachers in corporate America, I think. And this is the story of the stonemason. Once upon a time, there was a journeyman walking across the desert, and he'd been walking a long, long time, and he hadn't seen very many people on his journey. And when he did find people along the path, he would engage with them and learn from them and in this way begin to understand himself. So the journeyman was walking one day and came across three men carrying huge, heavy blocks of stone from a quarry, and carrying these huge, heavy blocks of stone up a hill in the hot desert sun. Back and forth, they would walk up and down these hills, taking the stones up the hill, dropping them off, coming back down, getting another huge carved stone, taking it up the hill, and dropping it off, and coming back down. And he couldn't see what was up over the hill. But these people, these three men, were carrying these huge, heavy stones up the hill. So, curious as he was, he stops the first man and he says, "Sir, why are you carrying that stone up a hill? What is it that you are doing?" And the first man says, "Well, I gotta make some money, and the best job I can get is this job at the quarry. And so the boss told me to get this stone here and walk it up the hill and drop it off there. And I do that until it's time to come home. And then I can feed my family and do life." And he picks up the stone and he goes up the hill. And the journeyman thinks to himself, "Oh, yeah, he's surviving here in this desert where there's not much here. Of course, of course." And so he goes to the second man and he says, "Second man, I see that you're carrying this stone up this hill and you've been doing this for a long, long time. Tell me, what is it that you are doing?" And the second man, eyes are wide, and he looks around and he says, "Well, I've got to carry this stone up there because if I don't, then I won't have a job and everyone around me is competing for this job and I need to look out and I need to be the best stone carrier that I can. And I got to go right now. I can't even talk to you very much because I'm just trying to keep myself above water and I'm trying to keep everything better. I'm trying to keep this job and I've got to go right now and I'm trying to be better than the people around me. So I've got to go, I've got to go, I've got to go." And he picks up the stone and off the hill he goes. The journeyman thought to himself, "Oh my goodness, this man clearly has some competition and he wants to be the best and he's clearly having a little bit of anxiety about this. And so finally, the journeyman comes to the third man and he says to the third man, "Sir, I've talked to two of your friends who are carrying these stones up the hill and I'm still not sure I understand fully. Can you tell me what it is you're doing? I've been watching you carry these stones up the hill now for a long time. What is it you're doing?" And the third man sets the stone down and he takes a deep breath and he looks the journeyman in the eye and holds his shoulders in his hand with a big smile on his face. And he says, "Journeyman, you'll never believe it. I have an opportunity to leave a legacy for my family. And by the grace of God, I get to carry this stone up the hill and build a temple. And that temple will be around for generations to come, for my family to come and learn and worship and speak with God for many, many generations. And I'm thrilled to be a part of something like this. I've got to go. I've got to take this stone up the hill." And off he goes. And the journeyman thought to himself, "Ah, now I understand." So the story of the stonemasons. I love this story because it illustrates perfectly the three levels of perception. And if you look at reality, these three men are doing the same thing. They're carrying big, heavy blocks in the sun, in the hot desert sun, up a hill. This is not necessarily glorious. You know, this isn't singing kumbaya or, you know, making music or anything that would be what we think of as pleasant. It's difficult work, laborious for sure. And they're all doing the same thing, but they're doing it very differently and they're doing it from very different perceptual states. So the first one that I want to talk about is the first perceptual state, which my teacher used to call the serpent level of perception. And if you think about a serpent will crawl on the ground really close. So there's no other animal that is closer to the earth than a serpent and some lizards. And this perceptual state is all about survival. It's all about survival. There's no emotion in this perceptual state. It's looking at the world through cold, factual eyes. Sun rises at this time. The bill costs this much. I have this much money in the bank. I need to get a job to cover those bills. I'm going to do this to feed my body. I'm going to do this to sleep and rest and replenish my body. It's all about survival. And this part of the part of the brain that regulates is the reptilian part of the brain, which is in the cerebellum. And this part of the brain developed first in our evolution. And this part just wanted to keep us alive, wanted to make sure we ate enough and had some babies and life continued. So this is the reptilian brain. There's not a lot of emotion. You know, if a serpent is like, oh man, I really liked that girl serpent over there, and now she's with that other guy serpent. You know, there wasn't a lot of emotion around that. It was like, next, survive. Survive, survive, survive. Interestingly enough, most snakes can only go forward. They don't go backwards. They can only go forward. And so this perceptual state is characterized by no emotion and dealing with the facts. The best tool of this perceptual state is the reality check of problem solving, accepting the facts, and solving the problem that is right before you. And that's it. And it's easy. And it's survival. Now, the thing that the reptilian brain and this level of perception has some limits. All of them have limits. Now, the limits being locked only in this perceptual state is that, sure, you're going to handle life and you're going to survive and you might win with the most money in your bank account at the end of your days. And without the other perceptual states, you will lack connection to other humans that is meaningful. You will lack that hearty heart, squishy connection to yourself, to life, to flowers, to rain. You will miss the connection of feeling meaning and purpose in life. And so people who are locked in survival mode are often devoid of meaning. This is a great problem in my assessment of when I look around at the world. I think one of the largest problems we're facing is that most people are lacking meaning. And it's because there is a romance about this survival state of collecting, of hoarding, of making sure that we live. And so that's the perceptual state. Very valuable and also very overused. The second perception state that you want to be able to shift gears into is what my teacher used to call the jaguar state. And the jaguar state is characterized by really, when it's healthy, deep emotions and motivation. And if you think about a jaguar prowling around in the jungle, the jaguar is pretty chill most of the time, unless there is somebody breaching a boundary or threatening the family. And then that jaguar is going to get super ticked off and some stuff is going to go down. Otherwise, the jaguar is laying in the sun, licking its paws, doing its thing, and connecting. The jaguar's eyes are a little bit higher up, and they can connect to other jaguars. In fact, they do, and they like that. And they have little tribes of cats that hang out together, the little prides of cats. And so when the mammalian brain developed, we started to, and this happens in the amygdala and the hypothalamus. I never can say that right. And in the mammalian brain came online to help us form relationships and bonds because it was in community that we could last and have a better life. Things like farming and, or not farming, that was more human, but things like joining together in a pride of lions would keep the pride safe. So we started to understand how it wasn't just about our personal survival, that we could connect and belong to a group and protect one another. So the mammalian brain was really important in its development for that. So when people get locked into this jaguar state, this is also the place of fight or flight. So when the rug gets pulled out from underneath you, many people hit this jaguar state, and it's not a cool, chill, relaxed jaguar that's like, yeah, I'm going to hunt when I want to hunt, I'm going to sleep when I want to sleep, and I've got all the power and everything I need. It's not that happy, self-confident lion or jaguar. It's the jaguar that's like, and its claws are out, and it's like, because it's scared. And when we go into fight or flight, and what my teachers used to call your jaguar gets up in a tree, and it's scared. It can get nasty, and it can be fearful, and it can hide, and it can attack, and it can freeze, and it can do all of these things to distract itself and avoid pain, because that's the goal of the mammalian brain, is to avoid pain. And if there's some perceived threat, a loss of a job, a loss of a relationship, a loss of something meaningful, that perceived threat can send our whole body into some kind of limbic spin where everywhere we see something to be afraid of, something to fight. So when we get locked into fight or flight, one of my favorite tools, honestly, it's so simple for coming out of fight or flight, is to take a deep breath. I talked about it in another podcast. Sit down and smoke a cigarette. Don't do that really unless you love it, but sit down and take a deep breath. and truly assess, am I in danger? You know, 99.9% of the time, you're not. There are a few people who have dangerous jobs and they are for real in danger. And it's a great time to have fight or flight going through your system and all that cortisol and adrenaline. Other than that, we don't need that much. So ask if, am I really in danger? The second tool that I love for managing emotions, because this Jaguar state can be really emotional and what's real and what's not can come into question. So my other favorite thing to do is something that I learned from Tim Ferriss, and it's called, I think, Fear Quest. And at least that's what I call it in my brain, where typically what will send us into fight or flight is fear. And it's this non-local emotion of anxiety. There's just anxiety. You're just anxiety. I'm afraid. I'm scared. I'm having anxiety. I'm having anxiety. And when asked, what is it you're afraid of? Most people can't answer that question because they're experiencing such a high level of fight or flight that it's what I call a non-local emotion. It's just an emotion that feels like it's everywhere and we can't pinpoint it. So the best thing to do with these non-local emotions, whether it's fear or sadness, I'm sad, why? I don't know. Ask yourself, what is it? What is it I'm afraid of? I make a list. I'm afraid of losing all my money. Oh, if I lose all my money, then what am I afraid of? Oh, well, if I lose all my money, then I'm going to lose my house. Well, if you lose your house, then what are you afraid of? Well, if I lose my house, then my neighbors will make fun of you. Aha. And if your neighbors make fun of you, what is it that you're afraid of? Oh, that I'm a fool. That I'm a fool. That I've ruined my life. Okay. And then you can begin to say, if that worst case scenario happens, how am I going to manage it? How would I problem solve it? So if I lost my money, how would I solve that problem? Could I? You know what? Probably so. If I lost my house, what could I do? Oh, I could move into an apartment. I could get a condo. I could live with my friend. I could go live with my brother. Start to solve the worst case scenario problems and let your mind know that there's actually not much to be afraid of. I mean, unless a jaguar is hunting you down or your house is on fire, be afraid of those things for sure. Otherwise, most problems that we face as humans, we can solve with help. It's true. So that's the best tool in that perceptive state of the emotions. And then the third state that I just want to describe is this last state that my teacher used to call eagle state. And it's as if you're on the back of an eagle, way up high in the mountains, wingtip to wingtip with spirit. And through these eagle eyes, you can see, that's why that happened in my life. Because if that bad thing hadn't happened, then this wouldn't have happened. I wouldn't have learned this and I wouldn't have done this and I wouldn't be where I am today. Oh my goodness. Thank God that terrible thing happened to me. Eagle state allows us to see with a wide zoom the divine perfection of our entire lives. Now, when we're having one of these breakdowns or breakthroughs, however you want to think about it, when we're losing our job and we've lost that relationship and the loved one leaves, it feels like the world is ending. And when we can zoom out up on the back of an eagle and look at our lives in totality, that this moment, this year, this 6 months, this 10 minutes is actually part of a much larger story. I told you about another podcast about how I failed out of Kent State University. And in that moment, I felt like my world was going to end, absolutely end. And now, this is the gift of age. You know, as we go forward in time, we get to look back through our lives and understand why things happened. And now I can see that had I not failed out of Kent State and gone through those dark times that happened afterwards, I would not have developed a deep compassion for my fellow humans like I did after that. I would have not have learned how to believe in myself and my ability to pick myself up after a whopping failure. I would not have trusted in my parents and in authority figures like I learned to do in that moment. So my whole life would have been different had I not had this colossal failure happened to me, that rug pulled out from under me. So eagle perspective gives us that ability. And it is this amazing moment of clarity. If you can zoom out, step out of the survival mode, step out of the emotional place and get way up into the place of divinity, of spirit, of totality, a universal perspective. And you can begin to see that everything, whether we understand it or not, is this beautiful divine composition of music, a symphony unfolding. And some of the notes are in minor keys, and some of them are sharp, and some of them are major keys. And all of it is important to the grand symphony of life, even the painful ones. Now, these three perspectives or perceptive states are important to shift in and out of. And I'm going to give you an example why. You can see why you wouldn't want to stay in eagle state only. It sounds like it's the best. Oh, everything's unfolding in perfection. And we all know people who live in that state or want to live in that state all the time. Everything's perfect. Yeah, I have, you know, a malnourished, my bone density is decreasing because I'm malnourished, but everything's fine. That, my friends, is a time to shift into serpent perspective. You're malnourished. You're not eating enough protein. You're not eating enough carbohydrates. You're not eating what nourishes your body. That is a survival problem. That needs to be an unemotional problem to solve. Get food. That's a survival there. Wow, I have $30,000 in debt, but it's all perfect, and spirit's going to make that go away. No. My dad always used to say, God cannot guide the feet that do not move. And by God, I mean that divine universal energy that animates all things and is neither masculine or feminine. So don't get your panties in a twist about that. It's just a lot easier to say God. But you're feeling me, right? So you cannot be guided by spirit if your feet are not moving. It's a co-creation. And so serpent is very important as a perceptive state. And it's actually the first thing that we need to take care of. That emotional state of jaguar is so precious. This is the place to make love from and eat steak from and strawberries from. This is this connection to people and life and joy and pain and sorrow and heartbreak and hope and happiness. The jaguar state is about combining together in a community. And without emotional connections and bonds, then we are isolated. And that creates a tremendous amount of pain for mammals. Tremendous amount of pain for mammals. There have been so many studies of isolation in primates and how they will go crazy and lose their minds and become completely lethargic and die so many years earlier than the primates that have tribe, that have community, that have company. So for us, and we are mammals, we need this. This is a part of our birthright as mammals, is to connect to one another and have access to that jaguar state. Now, if your jaguar is constantly in a tree and looking around, seeing danger everywhere, danger, 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 then you do have to find practices like meditation and deep breathing to bring your jaguar down on the ground where it can relax and chill out and lick its paws and wag its tail and drink some water and eat some stuff and hang out with its people. Yeah, we need to get those jaguars down on the ground. So here's my final story about how these perceptive states can change. So I just had a good friend come into the office and we were talking, and she just recently lost her job. Now, she was a hard worker, been there a million years, knew everything about everything, but the company had gone through a major change and that department got laid off. And she was devastated, in her own words. She was devastated and paralyzed. And the only thing that she could think to do was go to the gym every day. God bless her. That was a perfect solution for the moment. But during our conversation, what we could do is kind of split apart what was happening based on these perceptive states. So we had a serpent level discussion about survival. How much money do you have saved? What do you need? Do you need a job right away? Do you have time to look? Like, what are the serpent? Let's not get emotional. We're not going to hug and cry and do that in serpent level. We're going to do some assessment of reality, some problem solving around survival. And once we could check off, okay, survival-wise, she was set. It was fine. She did have some time. She got some severance. So she could then take a deep breath because her basic needs, she could see for several months, were going to be met. That analysis at serpent level, non-emotional analysis of the facts, enabled her to take a deep breath. And then we could examine this jaguar state. what emotions was she feeling? She was feeling a lot of stuff. And she was feeling this non-local anxiety just about, like, what's going to happen to me? What am I going to do? What's my life going to be? I don't know. And once we got down to it, the thing that she was most afraid of is that her life would not have meaning. And so the conversation changed in that moment. Once the fear was named, we could problem solve it. The problem is finding meaning. Can we go find that? Yeah, we can. We can create that with help and together in our little tribes of mammalian people together. So that was easy. She was also experiencing grief, the loss of her family or work family. There was a lot of grief around that. And so we honored the grief and we hugged and cried and we talked about how could she keep that tribe together and what could she do to build new tribe. And she was also feeling something that she named as shame, like embarrassment of, oh, now I have to tell people I'm one of these people that got laid off and they're going to think I'm a bad worker and they're going to think. And so with the shame piece, we were able to then talk about how to reframe the story. And I'll get to that with Eagle. So once we kind of took a look at the emotions and process those, then we could step up into Eagle state and start to look at how this moment might give her a great opportunity to discover meaning and to discover new tribe. And in the place of the Eagle perspective, billions of new possibilities exist. The Eagle state, that brain, that perceptive state, the brain is the neocortex. And the neocortex is the part of our brain that developed last. It's what they call like the beginning of the human brain. And this is where consciousness started to evolve and self-awareness started to evolve at all new levels. And learning happened. Emotional learning happened. And so with this access to Eagle state, we have access through the neocortex to an infinite amount of possibilities, infinite amount of learnings. So this is that godlike divine perspective of, oh my gosh, my life is long, epic, in fact, and it's all unfolding in this great journey. And this moment is a small moment. And if I were the author of that story, what would I want to happen next? I would want the main character to discover purpose. I would want her to change direction in life. I would want her to start meeting new people with a healthier mindset and making deep connections and going forward together in a mission. And this is what my friend decided. And so it's really valuable tool to be able to separate when the rug gets pulled out from underneath you. How can you begin to break it down into serpent details, survival? How can you break it down? What emotions are happening? Name them. Don't let them hijack your whole system in a limbic spin of fear. Start to analyze, what am I feeling? What is the name of this emotion? And what is it that I am afraid of? And the more you can drill down and name it, the easier it is to problem solve it, if any problems need to be solved. And then finally, popping up on the back of an eagle to start to see how all of it truly is unfolding in perfection allows us to take a deep breath, release any of the heavy emotions, and start to make very conscious choices about what to do next. We want access to our neocortex. We want access to what they call the God brain there. We want access to this higher level of consciousness because from this place, we will make decisions that are in alignment with our soul's truth. When we are stuck in the limbic brain, we will continue to build our lives on a false foundation. And then because we are in the times of the Pachacuti, they will continue to crumble, my friends. So if you have the rug pulled out from underneath you right now, it is a gift. It is a gift and is an opportunity to reevaluate what is your truth. What is in your soul? What is meaningful to you? What are your values? What are your hopes? What are your dreams? What are your fears? What is your truth? And build your life on that. Own it. Own the story. Own every little nook and cranny, dark and light, shadow and shine. Own it all. And stand in that truth without shame. Because that, my friends, is what will set you free. So that's the legend of the Pachacuti and how to deal with when the rug gets pulled out from underneath you. Remember, you can always shift gears in your respective states. It's the greatest gift. And when we do that, when we begin to see life in this way, then we can generate life through our own eyes. We begin to create our own realities because of the way we see the world. It begins to become what we see. So use those eyeballs. All right, my loves, that was a long one. Boy, did I have a lot to ramble on about tonight. You guys are so patient with me. Thank you. I love getting your emails. I love getting your ideas for podcasts. I am so grateful to you for them. If you have ideas, you can email me at natalie@naughtyshaman.com. I have cleaned out my inbox and got my junk mail sorted, and so that is a great way to reach me. And I am so honored to be a part of your tribe. Thanks a lot, people. Thank you for joining us at Naughty Shaman, where we like to keep the sacred a little wild and totally real.
If you're hearing this message, you've listened to the entire episode, and for that, we are so grateful. Please reach out to us. Let us know what topics you'd like to see covered in our future episodes. Get in touch in the comments because we love to hear from you. And you can reach us on social media.